Welcome to Commission Impossible. I am Scott Fish. With me, as always, is Ryan McDowell. We've become known for our commissioning over the years, got together, decided to start a podcast, take 2 years off, and then come back and relaunch the podcast. If you're new to the show, all episodes are pretty evergreen, which means you can do what many people do and binge them. You want to know how many people do that, Ryan? Our first episode back last week had 1,000 listeners in the first 48 hours.
Oh, very nice. That's great.
But before that, we had tweeted a few times and stuff like that. We're coming back, right?
Commish Pod
account and stuff at Commish Pod on X or Twitter. You can go follow us there. And with those tweets and stuff, we had 3,000 listens to Commission Impossible old episodes in the month leading up, in the weeks leading up, whatever, to our return episode. So I'm pretty happy with that. I know those numbers, you know, to some people sound probably pretty small. To some people, it probably sounds like a lot. But it was good to see people checking out the old episodes and then see people tune back in for that first relaunch, considering we didn't publicize it a whole lot. It was pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. Really happy with that. And of course, you know, I feel like we've always been well supported on this show. So that, you know, that makes it easy to do, more fun to do if, you know, people are listening and hopefully, you know, taking something away from it that helps their league or helps them maybe become a better commissioner.
Yep. I absolutely agree. It's very cool. I agree. I like the support. I like that we get lots of emails, commishpod@gmail.com. Mm. Keep them coming in. We try to answer as many as we can. I'll just the normal spiel, what we do on this show, go over league settings, league running, listener questions, bad commissioner stories, interesting league ideas people have sent us, some of our own ideas that have become very popular over the years, and we answer lots of emails. Email us at commishpod@gmail.com. Now, on to the show, even though we kind of already started the show and started talking. So last week's show was kind of a restart. I don't know how thematic we're going to go on episodes, but I gave it a shot with this first one. I actually took a glance at a couple of the emails. Remember how we used to just throw the emails on the show and we're like, this is our first time hearing this stuff? It's pretty close to that. I took a glance at them though this time, because I figured this is a good time to tell people out there, remind people, is now in January. Whether you're starting a new dynasty league or you're going into year 35, now is the time to discuss new rules for your league, right, Ryan? This is where you do it. You discuss settings, fix some loopholes you may have not fixed yet. Some rules you bring in may not be implemented till 2025. Some can be this year. Do you have any guidelines on what kind of rules do you think need an extra year? Like if you want to implement a rule now, there are certain ones that you can do this year. There are certain ones that you should probably, you know, it's going in, we're doing it, but we're going to do it for 2025. Do you have some basics of which rules go for which? Are there certain rules you have to wait an extra year?
I think there probably are. I've never actually, I don't think at least, instituted any of these rule changes. But I mean, when you're talking about changing starting lineup specifically, you know, we talk about it. We have talked about it pretty often on here, going from a one quarterback to a super flex league.
Yep.
Obviously a very major change. I mean, typically my answer would be start a new league or join a new league.
Yeah.
But if you're really, you know, if you've got a great group of managers and again, you've been together for years and years, then, you know, maybe you just want to make that change in that league. That would probably take a couple of years to transition to. Scoring settings, maybe the same thing. Again, we're talking major scoring settings that could take multiple years to fully implement. But, you know, for the most part, I think you can bring things in, vote on them, discuss them this time of year, and then essentially put them in the rule book immediately moving forward. But you're totally right. This is the time to talk about those things and have league votes if necessary.
Yep. Sounds like the boiled down version is, you know, lineup changes, scoring changes, anything that affected the way you built a roster or traded draft picks. Those are probably the main ones. I agree. I would say that the vast majority, unless it's something major, like one QB to Superflex, can be done now in January, voted on, or just put in depending on how you have constructed your league. If it's just a commissioner doing his best job for the fun of the league, or if it's, you know, a majority vote or unanimous vote, or like, now is the time, because you have for most dynasty leagues, you're sitting on 4 months until your rookie draft, just about 4 months. We're right. Probably looking at an early, I believe, the NFL draft's last week of the last full weekend of April. So the first Monday after would be the May 6th, would be the first May Monday of after the NFL draft. So I'm going to guess most of them are about 4 months away. I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I'm gonna bring it up. I don't even know that I want to. I was gonna say,
teasing us. Come on,
sometimes people complain about, oh, I traded draft picks 2 years from now because, you know, of this, you know, expecting a team to be good or bad 2 years from now, or because of a certain thing. And my opinion on this, after having run literally thousands of dynasty leagues, is that people aren't that great at projecting the next year out from one off season to the other. Like, if you're projecting a trade from like right now to next, like 16 months from now, people are generally not very good. Projecting 2 years out, people are terrible.
Yeah. You know, I see some of these trade talks on Twitter as well, and other places. And, you know, it'll be a comment along the lines of, I traded this player for an early 2025 first rounder.
Right.
Like, early? Really? Are you sure?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there's certainly some cases, you know, we've got teams in certain leagues that are just so bad, complete tear down. Yeah. So yeah, it's not to say that you can never predict, but
correct.
I mean, yep. I just think back to remember the NFL draft just less than a year ago, right? The Texans and the Cardinals are making moves at the top of the draft. The Texans end up with, the Cardinals end up with their own first rounder and the Houston Texans first rounder as well as a result of those trades. And the next day, the next week, you see 2024 NFL mock drafts with the Cardinals owning the first and second pick overall, because right. The expectation was the Houston Texans will be the second worst team in the league. And, yep. You know, now they're in the playoffs and into the second round of the playoffs. So, it's tough to predict. It's tough to predict the NFL. It's tough to predict our fantasy leagues as a result of that.
Yep.
You definitely have to be careful with basing too much on that.
Yep. That goes for that. That goes for your example. It goes for, we can't implement this because I traded these picks assuming this 2 years out. And also dispersals. I've seen people be like, I feel bad for the team that joined the dispersal and now they have a better team. And I traded for their pick 2 years from now. I thought they'd be a bad team. I'm like, you don't know that.
Yeah.
You don't know that 2 years from now. It's also, you also supposed that it was going to be the same owner managing the team and doing poorly instead of a new owner that might come in and try to go win now and trade young assets to, you know, do well and have a high, low draft pick. And we saw this in safe leagues a bunch. I had that one guy last year who got $51 teams and cleared $2,000 in profit. I retweeted a guy that picked up three $1 teams that nobody wanted. They sat for 3 months. No, they were trash. Everybody hated them. And he won the league in two of those three. I think the thing we see we talk about a lot in the off season is this, you know, or late in the season, we're like, look at this team. How did this team fail? It was an amazing team in the off season and I missed the playoffs. We see talk like that all the time. What we don't see a lot of, and it's just as prevalent, is this crappy team in the off season, this team that looked like crap, it actually did really well. Cause that happens too. So don't worry about the 2 years out thing. you're usually not, if you're good at predicting that, good on you. And you know, it kind of sucks because that means you have an owner that is kind of stagnant. Either they're out there, you know, could not, maybe they're just always, maybe it could be a pick that's always really good too. Maybe that team just is always good. Let's go to an email. Ryan, do you want to read this email? I think we're going to go at two emails that are going to stick on kind of rules implemented type of things, how they went down.
Yeah. Let's get to it. This is from Mark in Wilmington, Ohio. Mark says, great show, guys. Best on fantasy football. Thank you, Mark. Let's see. Only one I've binged and go back to listen to a second or third time. Wow.
Awesome.
Part of my family has been missing without you. Well, we are glad to be back. He says he was able to meet both of us at the expo in Canton in 2022. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Cool. Okay. On to my league setting. I'm the commissioner of our league since 1994. Over the years, we've had less than active managers. Our league has evolved into a big keeper league rather than dynasty. We keep 3 players on a practice squad plus 15 players on our active roster in the offseason, then 25 plus 3 during the season. So 25 active, 3 taxi in season plus an IR. To get managers to make more trades, we've added a trade exemption rule where managers can keep 3 additional players beyond that March 1st cutdown for a total of 21 players. If these players are acquired via trade from the end of our championship game through March 1st. So essentially, 2-month window there, basically all of January, all of February. It works, he says, Mark says. We've had more trades during that 10 to 11 week time frame than we do in the other 40 plus weeks of the year.
Wow.
Actually, the vast majority of trades happen in January. So that 3-week period is more active trade wise than all other weeks.
Wow. This is a good one. I like this.
It is a good one. Do you want me to start on my take on it, or you want to start on yours?
No, I'd love to hear it.
Well, the first thing here is, I love that he calls it a big keeper league. He must be a show listener because we've gone over that. But for a new listener, a dynasty league, you either keep your players year to year, or you you keep your roster the same in the offseason, or you increase. A keeper league is where you cut down to a total of keepers before the draft, and that before the rookie draft, and that can be 3 keepers or 25 keepers. It's still, that's a deep keeper league. But lots of people misnomer it as a dynasty, and that's fine too. We don't care. We don't shame that. It's just a semantics thing. I think he's playing to knowing me on that one. Since 1994, I've been going since 92. I love to see leagues like this going that long. But mostly I love that he's got an incentive there that creates an atmosphere where people want to trade more. And it's a good incentive that everybody can get. I feel like everybody can get behind, and it helps active owners, which is very fun. I wonder if this would happen, like if you did this in 1,000 leagues. We'll talk about this later, but when you do things over tons and tons of leagues, is this anecdotal? Is this his league? Is this a league of good owners? Or is this something that would actually work in all leagues? It feels like it would work in a lot of leagues. Obviously we can't have data points, but anecdotally in this one, this sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it works really well in this league because there was some level of inactivity in the league that that Mark noticed here, and I love that he tried to address it because I feel like that's one of the challenges of dynasty commissioners is coming up with rules to increase activity,
right?
And Mark was able to do that here. As far as it working across a large number of leagues, or really just in any league, It does feel like a rule that savvy managers could take advantage of.
For sure.
So, you know, you would want to be careful with that. I think it was kind of based on what we're reading here from Mark about his league, I think it was the perfect storm, the perfect rule, because when you have a rule like this, it's essentially demanding inactive managers become active, right? And mm-hmm. and even yeah. active sometimes just means sending some trade offers, right? Right. And plus, I love that it's in January and February. I mean, that's obviously the slowest time of year in a lot of yep. leagues. I mean, I know most of my leagues are very quiet right now, and that's understandable, right? I mean, we're still yep. watching the playoffs. We've done payouts, but we're not quite ready for some of that off-season stuff. It is about time to start the rules talks, like we mentioned earlier. But this is kind of the quiet transition in a lot of leagues. So I love that that Mark put this rule in just for this time period, these couple months here.
Right, right. And I'll touch on the obvious thing that you have brought up many times. Like, I've never done this type of rule, but you have. And I think you said you have. And not this exact rule, but a trade requirement rule. I feel like yeah. we've seen leagues that do. I've never personally done one, but sometimes you'll get an owner that'll be like, just making a couple trades just to make them to fill the requirement. It feels like some teams could do that with this, where they're like, I'll make a couple like 21 roster spots, like to keep 21 instead of 18. Those last three are, you know, players 19, 20, 21. I could see a few people making some just whatever trades for those last three keepers, you know, just to fulfill the requirement, but I can see most of them legitimately trying to make a decent team there. Cause even at that 18 to 20, like let's assume like I know it's a big keeper, but 18 to 21, there are some good players in that range.
Sure.
On your roster.
Well, what I like about the rule a lot, and yes, I have had some rules in my leagues that essentially required trade activity. This rule doesn't require a trade activity. It just incentivizes it.
Oh, yes, so, exactly.
I mean, right. that's the great thing about this rule. I mean, if you really are going to be that deadbeat manager and you're just not going to make trades, or you're not going to check into your league in January and February, that's fine. But you're going to be punished because you're keeping, 18 players, and yeah. half the league is keeping 21. So yep. you were probably already behind. You're falling even further behind. And that's why I said it really feels like it demands some level of activity.
Yep. Love it. I love it. And like you said, I know you said it, but just to repoint, you noticed something about your league and you fought for it. You found a creative way to a creative solution for it. That's beautiful. I hope yep. that's the kind of thing that a listener can sit and go, that's actually not a bad idea. Like my home league, I'm sitting here reading this. We keep four players, and we were three for a while. Then we moved to five, and we realized that's too much. We moved it back to four. I wonder. Like we trade a lot in the off season. I wonder if I could do something like this to add an extra layer. You can keep one extra player if it's a player you traded for the month leading up to the draft or something. Like I think that would create some crazy activity in my league that's just full of good owners already. So this seems like it could help a league that's hurting for activity, but also help a league that just add some more activity.
Yeah.
The second email, a similar topic line of a rule. It doesn't look like he's implemented it, but he has his thought on the implementation of it. This is from Steve. We've talked about this rule before, and oh, excuse me. Let me go back to what this is. This is the posting on the message board for like a 24 to 48 hour period for teams in the league to like come up with a better trade for, you know, like a trade counter thing. You remember okay. that, Ryan?
Okay. Where yes.
If a trade goes through, instead of going through immediately, it gets posted on the message board and the other teams in the league have 24 hours to, you know, try to make a better trade to one of the two teams for whatever it is. Hey, hey, welcome back. Super excited for the pod to be back. He didn't say where he was from. So Ryan, I'll let you think of a random place he's from as I read it. Super excited for the pod to be back. I continue to tell people I think that I enjoy talking through and debating scoring and roster settings more than players these days. Well, I get that. This was a contested topic I posted a while back, and I totally get the opposition points. However, It's really hard for me to believe that in a short window of time, another manager could easily figure out a better deal than something that took the originals weeks to come to an agreement about. To me, this would overwhelmingly affect newer players being taken advantage of or straight up collusion. Would love to hear your takes. Steve, you're not going to like my take, but I can go first. So from we've had people write in about this. How many times, Ryan? Five, yeah, six,
several, a bunch. Sure.
From what we've probably more than that. From what we've heard from the people who use it, it's the exact opposite of what you kind of said. The take advantage of a new owner thing. This is actually the thing that helps them because you're not going to get a totally ridiculous trade that does. Like if it's a totally ridiculous trade, everybody else is going to come over the top and quickly. And so that new owner doesn't get taken advantage of because the rest of the league is like, no, you're taking advantage of this guy. We will offer this kid something better. So that's step one. That's kind of the reason for the trade window. The can't quickly come up with an agreement better. Just on my own personal thing, when I see trades go through in my leagues, routinely, if it's a trade that I'm like, wait a second, I wish I could have had something like that. Routinely in my head pops a trade that I'm like, I would have traded you this and this for that. You know what I mean? I think two teams absolutely could get something better done quicker because they know the baseline that they have to shoot over slightly. But the detractions I think for this are the 24-hour window sucks. We have football 4 days a week. Like if you want a trade to go through, like if it gets done Wednesday afternoon, you have to wait till if it gets done Wednesday night and it's a 24-hour clock, there's a Thursday game, you know, like making trades on the weekends that can't go through right away. All of that kind of hinders. One of the reasons I wouldn't do it, although I understand the benefits, I feel like two teams put in legit effort and work to make that trade happen. They put in the time, they made the initial offer, they made counters, they put in time to make a trade happen. And then you put it out there and everybody else gets to benefit from the work that they put in. And that's something I don't exactly love about it, is that you put in a lot of work on a trade and you can see someone else just get the trade above you because all the data was out there for that other party. But yeah, I'd love to hear your takes on maybe what I said or what Steve said, but it is a situation I've actually heard the opposite from people, in that it helps people not get taken advantage of. And I personally think you could come up with a different deal pretty quick when one is posted.
Yeah, this is one we talked about quite a bit, as you mentioned earlier, and I like the rule. I like the idea behind the rule.
Yeah.
I've never used it in my league though, in my leagues. And I think part of the reason is kind of some of the things you talked about there, just the implementation of it. What happens when we are close to a game, whether it's Thursday or Saturday night or Sunday morning, do those go through automatically without going through this process, or are those managers punished? I think it becomes a really messy rule for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. I really like the idea behind it. I don't know. I don't have any argument with the idea of the rule. It's really just comes down to the implementation of it.
And But to those, like we've said a million times, we don't league shame. We don't rule saying do what you do, enjoy what you enjoy. I'm sure that people who use it around those games have rules in place where they're like, this trade, like maybe they just have the trade go through. And then, you know, if nobody counters by kickoff of that player's game, it's set. I'm sure there are ancillary rules that they've come up to limit that 24-hour window or whatever. It just, like you said, it's a little bit messy for me, and I have those few things I mentioned.
Yeah.
But yeah, just this brings me to a topic I just kind of wanted to touch on slightly, is settings may not always do what you think, even though it logically makes sense. And I think that touches on each of the first two, and other stuff we've talked about. But this guy thought it would do one thing, and from what we've heard from people, it does kind of the opposite thing. I'll give an example with Emma with the Fishbowl this last year. The last 2 years, we've had a kicker flex where you could flex up to four kickers on MFL, and you had to start one. You couldn't flex one on Sleeper. And it was a big point of contention 2 years ago, and people thought it was a huge advantage for MFL, and it turned out the data proved conclusively not an ounce of advantage. Dead even, absolute dead even, on the line, dead even, no advantage. And then I changed the scoring this year, where kickers were a little bit heavier this year. And even I thought I overdid it. My number crunching said, yes, it should be a slight advantage to MFL, but you never know. You never know owners. And that's the thing. You never know what owners are going to do with a setting that you implement. You think it's going to logically do this, and you never know. And what turned out, dead even on the line again. It within a two team variance, within a point and change variance on scoring, it was dead on the line. You can just say it's variance. It was that two teams difference, and it was on the Sleeper side, not on the MFL side. So the advantage was, and that could be just users. It could be users, or it could be how players performed this year, so you don't always know exactly what settings are going to do until you do it. And whether it's in one league or you're trying to test what a setting's going to do against many leagues. Another example of this is the Pigs leagues with bankroll inflation. I thought the money's going to roll over. We'll do these rookie auctions. The rookie picks will be worth a certain amount of money, which Ryan does. And I don't know that our rookie money scales are out there anymore. Maybe I'll have to figure out a way to put them up again. But I thought people are going to save money. Some will spend all of it, et cetera. And what turned out is after a couple of years, people were saving so much that the 101 pick was worth basically nothing because people had so much money because they'd saved it. And I didn't account for inflation. I didn't account for people saving so much money. I figured half the league or more would spend it all on the rookie drafts, and they just didn't. So you can't always predict what users are going to do. So even a setting that you think is going to do one thing, because we can't fully predict the NFL season, because we can't fully predict what a setting's going to do, because we can't fully predict the users in a league, we don't know what it's actually going to do. Another example of this is potential points. And I know we've talked about it a few times. I am 4 or 5 years into this. And once again, I don't use it in my personal leagues. I don't use it. But we're 4 or 5 years in, and all the points made on shows and in that article and stuff, they've been proven that that's not how potential points affects a league over thousands of leagues in multiple formats. And that's the problem is don't play in it. Don't commission it. Trying to think logically about what should happen. And their ideas were right. Those should logically happen, but they don't. Sometimes when we have settings and we put them in, we don't know what they're going to do unless we do it and see what the users do. And especially with some of these, do it over many leagues and many formats to see what it actually does. So go try stuff, people. That's that's my point. Go try stuff and see what it actually does. And hopefully it's awesome in your leagues. Ryan, how do you feel about all of this stuff I just said?
that was a lot. I certainly agree with kind of your final point there that it's good to just try stuff, right? I know I have started leagues in the past, multiple leagues, honestly, just to test one rule or one setting that I thought was cool.
Same here.
And I know you have. I know our buddy John Bosch has done the same. One cool feature will cause you to start a whole league and see what happens. And I've done that multiple times. So absolutely, whether you're starting your own league or joining, experimental leagues like that, I guess you could call them, try stuff for sure. Potential points specifically, I don't have a problem with it. I actually use it in – in my newest league that I've started this one last off season called Death Becomes You. We're going to have to talk about that league at some point, Scott, because it's got some fun wrinkles and rules, but,
I'm putting on for the next show. We'll talk about
it. Let's do it. But anyway, we do use potential points in that league, and, but there's a specific reason for it. It fits the makeup of the league, really. So
yeah.
You know, I think almost any rule, no matter how you feel about it, it's going to work in certain leagues and not work in other leagues.
And here's the other point of all of those like examples and potentially yours, make it fit your league. Like the yep. use of something like potential points. If your problem in your league is tanking, that is arguably one of the best fixes, but you got to know, you can't sit and grow a team's depth on your bench because that counts. The worst overall team will pick 101, right. Not necessarily the team that was the worst team the year before in the standings. But that's a great point to land on there. That go out, have experimental leagues, try those out, try out settings in leagues, but make sure that whatever setting you're doing fits the league. Because if you don't care about tanking, which we don't really care about tanking in most of our leagues, and lots of people don't. If you don't care about tanking, don't use potential points. Probably it's an anti-tanking measure, is what it is. Ryan, this was a fun time as always. Yeah, I think that's enough for today. We'll figure out some more shows going forward. But I'll just end it here. Let's end it here.
Let's call it.
Yep. And that's another episode of Commission Impossible. Make sure to give us a 5-star review on whatever you listen to podcasts on, and tell your friends, your league mates, your commissioners about the show. Follow me on Twitter at ScottFish24. Follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanMC23. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. You want a fun story, Ryan?
Sure, always.
That comes from last week. I definitely need to edit this down. Let's do a fun story, a fun quick story, Ryan.
All right.
So last week we talked about not being bothered by teams leaving, right? Like,
sure.
Like yep. we just, you know, maybe we've just grown to the point where like, yeah, just leave. But there was a time, we talked about this last week, a time on with people who are like, people were up in arms on social media about it. And I will say how you leave kind of does matter. It's not going to bother me or Ryan, but it does bother a lot of commissions. A lot of commissions will take it personally, like you mentioned you did back in the day.
Sure.
And it's kind of like the free speech arguments to me. You can say a lot of stuff and some stupid stuff or make some comments that get you in trouble on social media or even with an employer, but you're not going to go to jail for it. Right. That's the whole argument behind free speech. It's the government's not going to come after you. The perception of you can change. The same is kind of like when you quit a bunch of leagues and jump into new startups, or if you're a jerk on the way out the door, if you trash your teams, trading all your picks, you have every right to leave a league you don't want to be in, and you can leave for whatever reason you want, but other people do have a right to perceive you in a certain way after you do that. Right, Ryan?
That is, that's very fair. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, if you leave a league, 100% cool, but there can be a perception of you, and probably shouldn't complain too much about that perception if you did one of those things. But I got a fun story here. So I saw a guy leave both his safe leagues, and I never care. Like, we have 1,200 leagues. Last year we had 1,800 orphans. We lose about a team and a half per league, which is fairly reasonable for a dynasty league to lose 1.5 teams per league. So I had a guy leave two leagues. Couldn't care less. I don't care. It's part of the territory. Yeah. But here's the thing. I thought I recognized his name. I'm like, I recognize you. Like, I recognize you from the fantasy Twitter streets. And people who join Stafe Leagues, a lot of them are on the fantasy Twitter streets. But right. I'm like, why do I know your name? So I did something you said you don't do last week. You said you don't check up on them, you know? You don't check out.
I try not to. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah. So like, I usually don't either. Sometimes I'll just notice them on, but this one, I'm like, who is this guy? I know this guy. So I went to check and yeah, I know him from fantasy Twitter or just fantasy Twitter, whatever. Checked. He played in SFB last year. The reason it stood out to me is because I recognized the name and I felt bad because he said, fantasy's not fun anymore. I'm retiring from fantasy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he was only in like two leagues. So I was like, man, that's too bad. So I go to check him out. And the day he emails me that, his tweet is still a few more spots in my fantasy playoff league.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm like,
did you join it?
No, I didn't. But I'm like, this tweet of yours from today, the same day that you emailed me this or emailed Safe Leagues this. I'm not always the one that gets it right, but I saw that one and I'm like, wait a second.
Let's just say I hope he enjoyed his time in SFB this past year.
That's the thing with SFB. Like now it's put me in a spot where I'm like, you have to do something pretty bad for me to put you on a list and say you were never joining my leagues or whatever. So like this is not that. I will say if his name pops up as a guy we're like considering, and I'm like, but he said it's not fun anymore and he's retiring. So I don't want him to join SFB because if that's his frame of mind, I don't want that. But on the other side, if he lied about that, I don't know that I want him in SFB if he's lying about, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Either way, he's out, right? Either way, he's out.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't get it. But I thought that was pretty funny that the one rare time I go check and he's filling a fantasy playoff league after retiring from fantasy. I don't care that you left two leagues, man. Just say you're leaving two leagues.
I mean, the point of that story should be like, just be honest with your commish. If you need to leave, you know, you don't like one of the settings in the league or you just have too many leagues. Just be honest, you know, we're grownups here.
Yep. Absolutely. Another huge pet peeve of mine. I've been feeling this year is when people leave claiming their team is good and easy to get rid of. They're like, sorry, I gotta go, but don't worry, I left this team good. It'll be super easy to find a new owner. I feel like, and I would love your percentage on this, Ryan, as we talk here. I feel like that is like a 2% track record of being accurate. Like, I feel like if you're leaving a team, it's probably because you don't like half the time it's like, even in a league you don't like, if it's a good team, you're probably playing it out until you don't like the team anymore. Most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think 2%, that's probably fair. Maybe it's up to 5, but it's single digits. It's single digits for sure.
Yeah. If your team's that good, you're usually playing it out. I feel it's pretty rare that, that a person's like, this is going to be easy to get rid of. No, it's not even that easy to like, for a normal, like, it's not that easy to find owners for orphan dynasty teams in general. Yeah. But you add on that it's a team that not even you who built the team want to play with anymore. Trust me, unless you have multiple firsts and it's primed for a rebuild and you find someone that's even that. Yeah. No, that's not a thing. Please stop saying that your team is super good and it'll be easy to find a new owner. That's not that. It's never easy to find a new owner. It's work.
Yeah.